Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler, your host. Excited to be with you today. And boy, I know some of you are extremely busy this time of year getting ready for Christmas. And thank you for finding some time to listen to the show live. Excited about everything we're going to be covering today. This is a show all about education, college, saving for it. Getting in, succeeding at college. I've got an incredible panel that's going to be joining us. Really excited about it. And welcome if you're a new listener. This is all about saving taxes, building wealth, bringing it all together, protecting our assets and all that good stuff, everything in and around and in between. So I think we're going to have an incredible show for you today. Hope all you're having a wonderful holiday season. Our hearts and prayers go out to some of the tragedies, of course, around the world, around the country, and certainly in Connecticut. You can't wake up every day without seeing a child and thinking of that terrible experience. So hearts and prayers go out there as well. And I know many of you listen to this show on the podcast, sometimes weeks or months after the live broadcast. So we'll try and keep this current and real so that no matter when you listen to this, you're going to get something that's going to rock your world. So I'm excited about the show and how it's developed. We've got regular experts and guests that just continue to wow and amaze me too. Speaking of which, you know, let's just jump right into it. Let me say this before we bring in our first expert here that shares a weekly tip with us. I want to introduce what we will be talking about here shortly and a little more fully. I want some of you that are here specifically for the topic to hang tight and don't get impatient. We're going to talk about all different facets and stages of college education, which I know is huge. I mean, there's week-long workshops on all these topics, but we're going to see what we can tackle in an hour here and give you some good tips. But, of course, this is not just succeeding in college, not just paying for it, but how to get in, how to pay for college with loan applications potentially or college savings plans. So I'm even going to talk about how to get into college without even taking the SAT and ACT. Is that pretty cool? I got some personal experience. I'll share that one. So it's going to be good. So we're going to have some fun. We're going to keep it lighthearted. It's going to be a good time. So let me first, like I said, bring out our resident expert here today that's going to be talking about our tax tip. This is Brian Brown. He's a CPA manager here in our firm, Kohler & Ayer CPAs. A huge asset to our firm, a good friend, usually gets on the show about once a month, and we're excited to have him. Brian, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Mark?
Good. Excited to have you here on the show, man.
It's good to be here, and I would also like to echo sentiments of the tragedy, those who have been affected directly or indirectly. It's my thoughts and prayers go out to all those, too.
Yeah, it's just terrible, terrible.
Well,
I hope you and your family have a safe and happy holiday season as well. And now, what type of tax tip have you got for us today?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about Coverdell Education Savings Accounts. Some of the rules, some of the changes that might be coming down. Congress and the President, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. Let me tell you about 2012, then I'll mention 2013 a little bit, again, because of the uncertainty that is going on. Coverdell HSA, Go ahead, Mark.
Yep. And no, I just want to interject. I think this is fantastic, and I appreciate you talking about this, knowing that this was our topic for today. There are many different ways to save for college, and these are probably the most commonly used. So I love it. Yeah, so tell us what the Coverdell IRA is all about.
Coverdell, you can contribute up to $2,000 per beneficiary. It's in other words, the money's put in by the parents, the grandparents, whoever it is, but it's limited to $2,000 per beneficiary per child. The contribution needs to be made by April 15th of the following tax year. So for 2012, have to be made by April 15th of 2013. It's not like a regular IRA contribution. It's not deductible at all. It's just the earnings inside of it grow tax-free. And as long as they're used for education purposes, they can be taken out, no tax whatsoever. They can be self-directed, whatever the case may be, but they do need that's a little better out the overview of it.
Okay. Now, I think this is a great point because that it's not tax deductible. And one of the questions I commonly get is that, well, Mark, it's $2,000 per person that donates, or is it per child? It's per child. So, I mean, you can have anybody you want donate, but you can't put more than $2,000 in per child per year.
That's correct.
Now, here's the cool part, though. You can invest it very creatively. Now, you can self-direct an IRA, so this is not like the 529, Brian. I mean, you can really invest it in a variety of things and get a great rate of return and still, as you pass go, put in another $2,000.
Correct. That's absolutely correct.
Now, what's different about the 529? The 529 doesn't give you that flexibility, but it has another benefit. I guess it's the contribution amount.
You can put more money into a 529. But you're really limited on what you can do with it. The growth on a 529 is very slow. I mean, you can't put in at a high investment, high yield, high risk also to say. But on a 529, they're subject to state laws, Utah, California, wherever you may be, they're subject to state laws on what you can and cannot do to invest them with. And so they're very restrictive.
Yeah. Well, now, I'm just going to put you on the spot here, too. I know you've got kids in college. I mean, the Coverdell IRA is a small amount per year you can put in, but you can get creative with its investing. The sooner you start, the better. You got this 529 thing. How did you save for your kids' college education? Did you have any strategy or unique method that would be a brainchild for us?
I made my wife go to work for the university.
I like it. I like it.
It really, really cuts tuition down quite a bit. Doesn't save the whole thing, but it really cuts it in half, at least for us. And being in state and having my wife work at the university, that really was a great idea I had because it's working out really well.
That's right. I forgot that your wife worked.
We also put money away for it.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. I remembered your wife does work down at the college, and that obviously was a side benefit. That's kind of fun that you're thinking that way. I like it. Okay, so here in general, I think I'm just going to throw this out to everybody. This is the major issue that all of us face as parents, and I know this doesn't affect every listener on the show, so be patient here. But saving for your children's college or making your kids save for it can be very, very daunting. And so the one point I want to make is that I think getting creative is a key factor. I think using the 529 is nice. Using the Coverdell IRA is nice. Helping your kids get involved in rental property in your small business early on is excellent. But just doing anything, any little thing you can do is a good start, and to try to be consistent and keep investing. So I don't know. That's I just There's no magic, you know, sauce. There's no silver bullet that you can do that's just going to pay for college. Now, we're going to have some other experts talk to us today about what happens if I didn't save up enough. How does the FAFSA form work and college grants and student loans? And we're going to go over some of those factors. But if I can get a jump on it, it's really just that basic. And I've got some clients with some very creative strategies self-directing. And maybe I'll share one here in a minute. But, Brian, anything in summary you'd say?
I do want to just talk about 2013 just for a second. If Congress doesn't extend things, if things don't happen, things are going to be changing dramatically for Coverdales. In the past, it hasn't been just for post-secondary education. If you send them to private schools, they could be that, and you know that could work too. But the changes are only post-secondary expenses will be, or distributions will be acceptable.
Okay, now what you mean by that is you can't use the Coverdell IRA for private school or the kids' education as a junior high school, or whatever.
Yeah.
This is going to be only for college, period.
This is only going to be for college starting in 2013. Annual contribution limit will go from 2,000 down to 500.
Wow.
And last of all is, you know, they have education credits. The distributions will only be tax-free for those taxpayers who do not claim an education credit. So, again, there's some things that are happening here. We don't know what's going to happen. I have the sneaking suspicion that my gut feeling that these are going to be extended, and what's going to happen in 2013 isn't going to happen. I mean, the expenses are going to extend. Things are going to happen. I just need to let you know what we've got.
Well, I like it. Thank you so much, Brian. I know it's ugly, and everybody out there, you might be like, what is this 2013 stuff going to really look like? We don't know. We need to keep we're going to keep you posted. So here's the bottom line, folks. If you're listening to this show right now, I want to congratulate you. I want to encourage you to continue to listen on a regular basis, because come this next January, February, every show is going to be packed with updates and important information that's going to tell us what 2013 is going to look like. And this will be one of the topics. Well, Brian, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it. And talking about saving for college, incredible info, and appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, folks, now before we get to our expert panel here in one more moment, as you know, I want to bring in a tax and a legal tip every week as part of the show. And I asked one of our lawyers here to talk about educational planning from a lawyer's perspective. So we're going to get that piece right now with expert Lee Chen, a regular guest on the show. He runs our California law office. Lee, a huge asset to our firm. Lee, how's it going?
Hi, Mark. I'm doing great. I love the topic this week.
Well, I know you spent a lot of years in college, so it probably feels familiar.
Absolutely, and planning is so key. Right now, you know, people coming out with an average of $100,000 in student loans, and a lot of the problems, you know, with our clients get a lot of calls because of student loan debt. So this is where planning is key.
Yeah, no, very good, very good. And now, okay, so we got an incredible panel that's going to be joining us shortly here, so I want to get to them, but and I don't mean that to sound rude, but quickly here, tell us what your legal tip would be. When it comes to education, what do you run into quite a bit that you'd like to mention today?
Well, education is something that, you know, we frequently talk about when, you know, with a small business, are there ways you can get tax deductions? And, you know, that's something that you would want to talk on the accounting side. On the law side, we frequently get this in terms of when they set up their trust. in terms of how can we make sure that the money goes for education and to make sure it goes for the right purposes. So, you know, we have a checklist that we give to our estate planning clients that gives them suggestions on how to set up trust provisions for your children's education.
So let me get this straight. So if I can't pay for my kids' college education, I can die and leave an incredible inheritance for them, so I can pay for their college that way. That's not a bad plan. I mean, that's probably the easier way to do it. Oftentimes, I feel worth more dead than alive.
Yes, and Mark, you always say, you know, do you have minors or adults who act like minors? You know, do you just want to write a check to your kid or whatever for college? That's usually something we dissuade people from, but there's ways that you can encourage them. And, you know, through the trust. The trust is just a contract, and it can be as flexible as you want it to be. You can say, for example, Mark, you know, Dylan, for example, your son, you know, if he goes mm-hmm. to if he doesn't go to BYU, you'll get a certain amount of money. If he goes to, you know, University of Utah, he'll get, you know, tuition, you know, he'll get a bonus, whatever.
Oh, new car.
You can make it as flexible as you want.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. For those out there that don't know, I went to University of Utah, so our rival's BYU, and so whenever I can get a good dig on a BYU, you guys know I'll take it. So Lee's very familiar with that. So no, it's great. You can put all sorts of rules in there for your kids. Anybody that's heard my workshops before, and I know Lee, you teach this regularly, all sorts of GPA rules and provisions for kids, so that when you pass away, you can leave a certain amount to make sure your kids do get through college. And that's a huge part of education planning, is having some sort of fallback. Now, one thing that I heard you talking about the other day, and this is what I wanted to have you mention too, is not just having education provisions in your basic living trust, but you'd been teaching a little bit about education trusts, so a specific trust just for education. When would you use something like that?
Well, that's more a trust that's specific to education, meaning, you know, it's not something that we're going to be, you know, dealing with your rentals or your LLCs or something like that. And it's more designed with someone who really wants to leave their legacy for, you know, their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, and put dynasty provisions where, you know, those types of gifts can, you know, get preferential tax treatment, and it'll be spent just for education, and, you know, we can also put some asset protection aspects to it. And so, you know, if you want to save money and you want to make sure you know, furthers the education for your kids, your grandkids, you might want to consider, you know, an education trust that's specific for that.
I like it. A great, great topic. And a lot of people don't think about it. And, you know, how many of us, you know, would like to leave a legacy or some sort of attachment to a grandchild or a great-grandchild? I mean, if my grandfather or great-grandfather had set aside a trust for my education, which they didn't, but it's okay, still love them, I obviously would have been a little more interested in their life and their journal and their history, and it maybe would have even drawn me closer to my heritage. And so I think, you know, I often want to take and put a little piece in my estate plan. I've talked to my wife Jennifer about this, of creating some sort of spin-off education trust that could live on for many years to come. And these education trusts can be created now or later. And anyway, Lee, I was just fascinated. You were working on one of those the other day. I thought that was pretty cool. And I'm glad you mentioned that. Anything in summary, just kind of from a legal planning point, that you'd like to just encourage families to think about when it comes to education and realizing we're not going to live forever?
No, just, again, the trust has so much flexibility that you can pretty much control your kids while they're in college with these provisions, where you're going to give them money if they do this, if they don't do that. You could be as flexible as you want. We have some ideas that we can help you with. So, and that's all part of our estate planning consultation.
Well, I love it. Well, Lee, thanks so much for your time today and jumping on the show and talking about a great topic that, again, anybody out there could benefit from. We all need to get our estate planning done. It's a great time of year to do it. We've got some changes with the estate tax coming next year, too. Another topic, 2013 is just going to be huge for a lot of adjustments and modifications to our tax and asset protection and estate planning for all of us. So, Lee, thanks so much. Everybody needs to get a hold of you. Lee, what's your email address?
My email is Lee, L-E-E, at kkoslawyers.com.
All right, Lee at kkoslawyers.com. And if folks, if you can't get a hold of him quickly enough or the email bounces or something, let me know and I'll get you in touch with him. Lee, thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Good luck.
All right. Well, folks, I am really, really excited now to introduce our panel for today. This is an exciting topic for me. I've been working towards getting this show put together for over a month, and I've been talking with different experts and have been able to find three that I think are going to provide some tremendous value to you as a listener. We hope to get their information out there for many of you that may want to use their services too. But I think this is going to be just phenomenal. So I'm going to start. We've got three different guests here. I'm going to start with ladies first. And we've got three different pieces here of and I know all of our experts here today work in education every day. So they're going to be able to share a number of thoughts with us. And so I'll just kind of bounce it around here. And if anybody has a question during the show and would like to share an experience or have a question for one of our experts, we're going to just take live callers today. I won't offer any emails or chats. We've just got a lot to cover. But the phone number here for today is 646-200-4285. That's 646-200-4285. Of course, we've got Lisa in the studio. She'll pick up your call. Just press number one, and she'll screen you and get you on. Okay, so our first expert or guest here on the show, Alana Cooper. She's now I'm going to just truncate some of these just incredible bios that we have on our guest today. But she's got a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology from Loyola Marymount, and she's was in the admissions department at LMU for Loyola for many years, and she has been working with undergraduate admission applications and financing and financial aid. She's worked in this area for many years. She's also currently working with ESM, which we'll be talking about here quite a bit. She's working with ESM Group, a strategic college counseling company. And so she's with them. She's also got a Master's of Arts in Counseling with an emphasis in college counseling. So, man, I wish I could just take her to dinner with my kids. I mean, so this is so powerful. So first, I know Alana's going to be – we're going to be focusing a little bit more with her on the financial aid aspect, even though we know she does a lot more than that, and we're going to hear her thoughts. But Alana, welcome to the show.
Thanks. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for being here. We're so excited to have you.
Absolutely.
Her cohort here. We'll stick with ESM here for just a minute, and then I'll introduce Jason. But Harry Kisker is also joining us. He's been an educator since 1967. He's got an undergraduate at Colgate, a PhD at Cornell. He's been vice president of student affairs at Lawrence, vice chancellor for student affairs at Washington University in St. Louis. I mean, a provost, dean of affairs. His list goes on and on. We're so honored to have him. He was also in 1999 appointed director of college counseling at the Collegiate School in Louisville, Kentucky. So we could just go on and on here with his counseling experience as well. And he is not as much an expert with financial aid, but on exam test preparation, college counseling, and helping kids get into college. So you can see where we're going with the show. We want to hit all these different aspects, and we're just excited to have Harry with us as well. Harry, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank
Happy
you
to be
so
here.
Much. Well, thanks for having some time with us. We really appreciate it. Now, our final expert here, which adds another aspect to this entire topic, and I'm excited about this, is Jason Girard. Jason is also the where to start here? Okay, so not only a college graduate himself, but he is the Chief Operations Officer of Discernment Group International, a a business educating people on economic stability and finance. But he's also wears two hats. He's been working with College Plus for years, and he basically coaches students around the country on getting through college the most effectively and quickly for cost effectiveness. For example, he obtained over 70 college credits in 1 year at one point. He holds a BSBA in finance. He's coached students through over 750 hours of college credit. And throughout this process, he's helped College Plus help students customize their degree, the average degree only costing $15,000 for a fully accredited bachelor degree. And he's helped thousands of students graduate in 3 years or less. Not personally, sorry, this is College Plus, and this is who Jason works with as well. So we're excited to have him with us as well. And so, Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I am somewhat of a little intimidated here with the incredible panel we have. I went to school for myself for secondary education for close to 12 years to get a master's and a law degree. But I was always very intimidated with my professors. So I feel like I'm sitting in a chair on the front row, and I've got these three professors here that are about to lecture me. But let's go to our first guest, Alana, here, and stick with the numbers here for a minute. We just finished up with Brian talking about covered LIRAs and 529s and trying to save for college. We talked with Lee about, you know, having some sort of a plan to pay for your kids' college if you pass away. What happens even before we get our kids into college, and we talk about testing and applications and all that, just for a minute, let's just deal with this financial issue for a minute. Lana, what are you running into out there? What are you telling families, and what are families experiencing when it comes to paying for college right now?
You know, I think families are really being intimidated right now by the cost of college. You know, they're seeing that initial sticker price. They're going on the college website. They're seeing what the average cost of tuition and then room and board and what the overall cost of attendance is per year. And the first thing parents think of is, I can't do this. I can't afford to send my kids to college. You know, maybe they should go to community college first. And I just don't know how this is going to happen. And, you know, what I aim to do is to get out there and to talk to parents and say, there are options out there. You know, there are ways that we can get funding. There are scholarships. There are grants available. There's so many resources out there. And parents just need to be informed. They need to know what their options are, and most important, they need to be organized. This is the time where parents have to, you know, be ready to file taxes early. They have to have all their paperwork together, and I think as soon as they get through that main hurdle of being organized and they have some help going through the process, everything just begins to fall into place.
Now, I suspect it's never too early to prepare, so I would presume that you're counseling families, even when kids are a freshman or sophomore in high school, starting to talk about how they're going to pay for college and what colleges they might go to. I presume, or is this kind of, are you more of a last-minute planner?
Oh, no, absolutely. You know, many of the families I've worked with, you know, I have had older siblings, so when, you know, the younger ones hit freshman year, parents know, okay, this is the time we need to start thinking about it, you know, rather than waiting till their senior year on March 1st when the deadline is March 2nd. So, you know, ideally I do like starting with freshmen and sophomores, getting the parents informed. You know, technically you cannot start filling out the FAFSA, which is the online form for federal student aid, until January 1st of their senior year. However, there's a lot of prep you can do ahead of time. And that is what I strive to do with the families, you know, the students that I work with. And I just think it takes off a lot of the anxiety that comes with the entire process.
Now, I know many, me being a father of teenagers, I know some of you may think, Mark, you're so jaded, you chose this show just for yourself. No, I know there's many of you out there listening to this show. Yes, there are. There's millions of us out there. But so now at ESM Group, I wanted to say, as families out there, you can feel also in the dark, and you may have a very active college counselor in the high school that's very helpful. You also may feel like you're not getting much support at all. But your company, this is stuff you help with people every day. I mean, people can get out there and find support. They shouldn't feel like they're on an island.
correct, exactly. And, you know, just to mention, I've kind of been on both sides. I've worked at the university, and I'm also a high school counselor, and I do ESM, the private counseling. And, you know, from being on both sides of being a high school counselor in the schools with the students and through ESM, it's very different. You know, as a high school counselor, depending the state you live in and what your caseload is, you can have anywhere from 200 students to 900 students on your caseload.
Oh, unbelievable.
So, you know, high school counselors these days in the schools can only do so much. You know, your student really is only going to get so much private one-on-one attention through your high school counselor. You know, through ESM, we really strive to get that one-on-one support. So we are in no way replacing high school counselors, but we're giving them that additional information, that one-on-one time that they need, you know, a little bit more hand-holding, being a little bit more detailed through the process, really sitting down with them, helping plan their college visits, helping them fill out the FAFSA, helping them do applications, going through their essays a couple extra times with them. So, you know, it's just a little bit more support, the one-on-one attention. So they're just two very different things.
Okay. Now, now, Harry, before we come to you about, you know, test taking and getting into school, which I want to come to in just a moment.
Right.
Give me one more moment here. Last week, it was funny. I bumped into it was just an acquaintance, and it was through the law firm. And this young kid was like, "Hey, Mark, yeah, it's." I was actually teaching a workshop, and he came up to me after, and he says, "Oh man, it was great. I just quit my job. I'm waiting tables, and by doing so, I just got all this incredible financial aid. So Obama's administration is totally paying for my school." And I was like, "Well, wow, that's great. I'm so excited for my higher tax rates next year. But oh well."
Yeah.
So I guess, Alana, there is some magic to this. I mean, do I need to start thinking of getting into a – can you help me look poor enough to get financial aid? Is this something you really want to anticipate a little bit of planning here with your financial plan too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's so tricky, and I'm so careful about, you know, helping parents look poor. You know, I've even had parents that have asked me, "Well, should we file for divorce when he's a freshman so I can file as a single parent by the time he gets to the senior year?"
Wow.
So parents really recently have gone to the extreme to, quote, look poor. You know, there's certain things we can all do. There's certain ways we can invest money. But you have to be very careful. And when it comes down to it, a third of students are what's called selected for verification each year, which means out of everyone that completes the FAFSA and that's receiving some type of form of aid from the government, one third of those students are going to be selected to be verified, meaning that the school is going to request a copy of your tax returns, they're going to request your W-2s, they're going to request all this information, and, you know, things will surface. So, you know, you can get creative, and there's certain things we can do, you know, when planning ahead of time, but you just need to be careful because it is the government and it is our taxes, and, you know, you don't want yourself to get in trouble as well.
Now, we're going to come back to you here in a moment, but one last question for kind of putting a little bow around this topic of financial aid. You've just got us here for a minute. You've got all these parents listening. What would be your number one recommendation in helping parents find ways to fund for college when they don't have that pot of gold they saved the last 20 years for? How do they get financial aid? Any 1, 2, 3 or one, or what would you recommend?
You know, the first one, like I said before, is to be organized. This is year to file your taxes as early as possible. The FAFSA goes live on January 1st. Obviously, we're not going to have our taxes from 2012 done by January 1st. However, if we can get them filed, you know, right in the beginning of February once we get all our forms, or, you know, if you're a family that's always requiring an extension, you can use last year's return. However, you have to put that in as an estimated, and then you have to go in and update your information. So it's really critical that if you're going to use the estimated numbers from last year, that you update those numbers as soon as you receive them. March 2nd is the deadline. If you miss that deadline, especially, you know, the way our economy is going now, you are in trouble. You have to meet the March 2nd deadline. That is the most important thing. And with that being said, you know, although the deadline is March 2nd, I, when working with my students, tell them February 15th. The reason I say February 15th is because if there's an error, if something goes wrong when you're submitting, This gives you time that you'll get the email back, you'll see there's something wrong, you can go in, you can fix it, you can make your updates and changes so that by March 2nd, everything is submitted on time, and, you know, you should be good to go. Another important thing that students and parents don't always understand is a lot of times by March 2nd, you haven't gotten your admission decision back. So if you apply, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 schools, maybe you've heard from 3 of them. When you're filling out that FAFSA, you need to put the school codes for all the schools you applied to on your FAFSA so that by March 2nd, all the schools get that information. You don't want to wait until you hear back from the schools to do your financial aid paperwork. It could be too late if you wait. So you need to have everything submitted by March 2nd. And then the last thing that's, you know, critical is you really need to take the time to look into each school's financial aid application process. Many schools, in addition to the FAFSA, will require additional forms that need to be submitted. So please check with all financial aid offices. They have their own financial aid application and need any supplementary information. It's just really important to communicate with your school's financial aid offices as much as you possibly can.
Wow. Incredible advice. I love it. And we're going to get your contact information out there here, of course, before the end of the show. So, and I'm sure we'll hear from you again. But thank you so much. Just very, very powerful. I'm sure a lot of parents are taking notes here. Now, gosh, now moving on here in a sense, if it wasn't hard enough thinking of how to pay for college, and we know how important college is. I mean, this is not a show to dissuade anyone from going to college. I mean, it's so, so important. But now we got to figure out how to get in and testing and applications. And gosh, Harry, I know, again, this is just one area of your expertise in the many, many years you've spent in education. But where do we start on this application process and SATs and ACTs? I know parents, again, really probably need to start soon. What are you telling families out there? What's your
Well, it's certainly starting sooner than it used to. I think the fact that college applications, that is the number of applications colleges receive on average, have just skyrocketed, partially because there's a slight increase, not huge, but a slight increase in the number of 18-year-olds applying every year. But kids are just applying to more places, I think principally out of self-defense. It's getting harder to get in, so I want to make sure I get in someplace where I want to go, so I'll just apply to a few more places, which then drives this kind of upward spiral of places getting more selective, which means I got to work harder to get in, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the other half of what I think parents are hearing. They're hearing what Alana just spoke to, which is the costs are going berserk. And then, as if that weren't bad enough, they're hearing that, okay, it's harder and harder to get in, which makes them want to go like, okay, let's move somewhere else. You know, to Canada, I don't know, somewhere, anywhere, where it isn't this complicated. I want to make one quick comment, though, if I may, about what Alana was talking about. For parents to understand that there's two kinds of ways to get money. There's something called need-based aid, which is principally what she's been talking about, that requires you to sort of lay out all of your financial, you know, sort of underwear, so to speak, so that everybody can look at it and decide how much money that you would qualify for. But there's also a very significant amount of money available, and this will be, I think, a boon to your higher-end listeners in what's called merit aid. And merit aid is really, in short, what we used to call scholarships back in the old days. Somebody who was a good enough student that the college was willing to invest money in letting them come to their school. And what that means is, essentially, merit aid is not based on your need profile. So you may already have lots of money in the bank. You may have, you know, all kinds of trusts set aside to cover the cost of education, but you can still get a lot of resources from schools that offer merit-based scholarships. If you've got a kid who is a very good student, has strong test scores, all that kind of stuff, which we'll talk about in a minute, they have plenty of aid available, scholarship forms, and so on. Either very competitive ones where you have to do a separate application and fill out things, or there is merit aid available from lots of colleges based solely on your GPA and your test scores. You don't have to do a thing. I know I've worked in a number of private schools that the kids were coming back saying, I just got a 50% scholarship that I didn't even apply for. Well, that's because that kid has a profile. Their test scores are high enough. Their overall grades are high enough that the school wants to attract a caliber kid like that to come to their place, and they do it by providing an incentive of merit scholarships. So there's still that's a little bit of good news for folks who feel like they're a little beleaguered right now, probably, hearing about Obama suggested tax increases and then all the rest of it, going, good God, you know, we're getting hit on all sides here. So, okay.
Yeah, no, great comment. And I think, too, you know, obviously we start throwing athletic scholarships in the mix. And,
right, exactly.
And there's many ways to get proactive with your children in junior
right.
high.
If your kid
high
plays
school,
a great tuba and the Michigan State band needs tuba players, expect to get some incentive money.
I like it. Very good. Now, now working backwards here, maybe this is
right.
a great, maybe it's just me thinking here, is that if I'm a senior in high school, I'm going to be submitting all my applications right now. I mean, they've got to be in before Christmas.
Oh, right, exactly, which is why those of us who work with kids independently are very busy at this moment.
Oh, yeah, you're swamped. I know. Again, thank you for finding time to jump on the show.
No problem.
No, you're so busy at this time. You're getting the applications in, then the financial aid piece, like Alana says, comes next if you're going for need-based
right.
Help. The merit scholarships will be coming and all those applications. So if we're working backwards, so say my applications are going in now. I'm a senior. I've been working on them for the last 2 months. When should have the testing taken place? What, is it,
well,
is
the there's a pretty standard timetable. Mark, that the usual first introduction to stuff is either the SAT or the ACT kind of introductory practice tests, which most kids would take in the fall of their sophomore year. Many high schools sponsor these now. They're available, you know, sort of free of charge. Parents don't have to pay for them. It's a way of getting a kid introduced to the testing environment, and it gives them a kind of a benchmark for where do I go from here. If I do really well or reasonably well, then you know, the next round, which is the second version, the second cycle of the PSAT or the PLAN program, it's a acronym, PLAN, that ACT uses, that comes in the fall of junior year. And then the regular test cycle, the full-fledged real thing, usually I think folks should be looking at starting in January of the junior year. In the spring of junior year, do not wait until senior year in the fall to get around to doing the testing thing for the first time. You don't have enough time left over that if you need to get some help in your testing skills or you need to brush up on geometry, which you haven't looked at since the ninth grade, you're not going to have enough time to finish and produce the scores that you'd want for the actual application cycle.
Well, excellent. And yeah, I appreciate, I know you when you said, Mark, this is pretty standard. Parents, have this structured procedure. But I asked that too for, you know, a lot of the young parents out there going, wow, when does this all begin? And so I'm grateful that you laid it out that way, that there's these practice tests happening in sophomore and or junior year, and then they start getting more and more serious so that you've got that spring of junior year where you're really hitting your tests hard and trying to get the best score. Now, I did say early on, Harry, now this is the comedic portion of the show. I've got to throw this out. This may blow you away. I got into college without taking the SAT or the ACT.
Mm-hmm.
And now I was an anomaly. I was grateful to get on and to got my undergrad, a master's degree, a law degree. But I want to give this little tip out there to family members. You know that if you can get into a lower level college maybe without testing, you might get lucky. But those days are gone. I mean, this was 20 years ago when I pulled it off. But I went to the North Shore, Hawaii for my first year of school, and there's this really cute girl in the admissions department that said, hey, you've got to get your ACT and SAT taken or else we're going to kick you out at the end of the first semester. But apparently she really, you know, you would like this, Harry, apparently she really liked long walks on the beach. So I was able to work my way into a situation where
there's a will, there's a way. I see.
Yeah, yeah. So I, you know, a few nice dates, some movies out, and some long walks on the beach. I was able to get around the ACT and SAT. But parents, I am not recommending that strategy. I just want to throw that out. Now,
Beller.
Now, Harry. Now, this I think a lot of parents want to ask this too. Is it what's the the masterful equation? Is it high test scores, high grades? Is it being, you know, donating time at the Salvation Army on the weekends? Is it a combination of all that? How do kids get into school with all this competition out there nowadays? What are you,
well,
ESM, I know you work on this.
You're asking what everybody really wants to know, and that's the first question inevitably I've gotten hit with over my entire professional career as a college counselor is, what does it take to get into fill-in-the-blank school? You know, and there is no silver bullet. Every particular applicant situation is different. There are certain things colleges will, in the aggregate, look for, so we can make generalizations about it. But I always have to caution people that, you know, there are exceptions to all of these rules. And bottom line is, with higher education in the United States being as diverse, there's 2,500 four-year colleges plus. Imagine that. Can you imagine 2,500
wow.
car companies? They'd never survive. But all these places that still have their doors open are doing something right. People are still going there because their graduates are succeeding and finding what they're looking for. So we have the huge choice of options. Where things get tight is when people all want to go to the same 20 colleges. That's where the competition gets seriously intense. And at that in that case, what you've got is you've got the best combination of things to remember is that first and foremost is your academic record, your grades, and the rigor of the curriculum you're taking. So my advice is to folks who are trying to plan this from the front end, whose kids are coming out of middle school or may just be starting high school, is try to take the most rigorous courses you can take without lowering your GPA in the process. There's a place where the curves cross that you don't want to go beyond. If you're taking a bunch of APs and it's pushing down your overall GPA, you've passed that mark. Back up. Take what looks good, what is rigorous and produces the best GPA for you, and stop. Ditto for test scores. There's what I call Harry's rule. Harry's rule, and the only rule, is higher is better. Higher test scores, higher GPAs. Rarely do I find people not get into colleges because they're too smart.
That's very good. And you know, and one intangible here, and then before Jason, we get to you here in one moment, but I may, Alana, ask if you want to comment on Harry's feedback here. But Harry, one last question here too before we move on is, how much do those intangibles play a role of whether it's sports, donating time, music, extracurricular activities? Are colleges really still looking at that, or does it all come down to the numbers?
It comes down to numbers for the minimum. In other words, if you want to be eligible for admission to a particular school, you have to look at kind of what their mid-range, the middle 50% of their numbers of accepted kids are. If your kid is kind of in that middle range, then that school is a school for which you are you meet the minimum requirements, more or less, but that doesn't get you in the school. That just means you're in the competition. And that's an important distinction to make. I think parents who remember the good old days, and the good old days consist of, well, you took the SAT once, that was it, and you were done. Then you took the SAT achievement test, which are now the subject tests, and you were done. All that has changed. Where the other items come in is the biggest change, I think, that's from when parents went to school and what's going on now, is that colleges used to, on average, look for the well-rounded kid, the sort of Renaissance person who could play sports, throw football, do this, do that, also succeed in the classroom, etc. What they're looking for now is a well-rounded class. They'd much rather have the really crazy physics geek with good, strong physics grade, whose only extracurricular activity might have been being a part of the audiovisual club, than to have some kid who has a long list of activities, but doesn't really have a passion for any one thing. Colleges call this, and we're looking for kids with an edge as opposed to the well-rounded kid.
Very good. Well, excellent comments. Thank you so much, Harry. Now, since we are moving along here on time, and I want to give ample time here for Jason to give us kind of another, and please stay with us, Harry. Alana, I want to come back to you as well. But Jason, let's add another twist to all this. So We've kind of talked about the financial piece, as need-based as well as merit-based, and great comments, and then how to get into school, testing, and preparing early. Now, once you're there, Jason, you've had quite a bit of experience helping people get through as quickly as possible. Not that, again, Harry and Alana coach on this as well, but your experience is fairly unique in that a lot of kids, they want to get done with school. What are you telling kids once they're there? What are some of the advice you're giving kids?
Yeah, well, actually, we work with the majority of the students that we work with, we're working with actually before they even get to the college.
Oh,
and
okay.
Our emphasis, the way we save time, the way we save money is through credit by examination. So I'm sure the other panelists are aware of things like CLEP and DSST, ALEKS courses, ACE. So what College Plus does is they help students work through those and understand exactly how those are going to transfer into either the college of their choice or a college that we've picked ahead of time that specializes in accepting that type of credit.
Okay. Now, these tests, now I just want to reiterate what I just heard from you, is that when kids, I guess, in their senior year are taking their AP tests and going through SAT and ACT testing, you would like to introduce them to the combination of what school are you going to, and maybe there's some extra tests you could be taking that might knock out some credits. Would that be a fair restatement?
That's exactly right. Yep. Yeah. So those, like the example that you gave of the 70 credits that I earned in 1 year, that was primarily through CLEPS, but also a combination of some DSST, some online courses, and all of those I eventually transferred into the college that I graduated from, Thomas Edison State College. So all that was actually done online, and what we call it is accelerated distance learning.
Now, I was listening to NPR the other day about this, and this is one aspect that was fascinated me and why I wanted you on the show, too, is that with the increasing costs in education, there was a show talking about different colleges trying to, again, cram down that overall cost to get through a four-year degree. And this distance learning, online learning, it appears to be a wave of the future in a lot of ways. And I loved the campus experience. I mean, I was going to have an expert on the show on how to get into the right sorority or fraternity. I mean, this is an important part of college. But
right.
But you didn't have that traditional experience as much, or I think some of the students you have coached, they're doing this on their computer at home. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. So it does, you know, one of the things that we look at as an institution, even what I do myself through aceofaccomplishment.com, is identify and just realize some of the problems that higher education is experiencing, especially with the recent economic downturn. You know, you can look at the statistics, and they definitely vary depending on the pool of students, but you know, students after the spring of their graduation are looking at anywhere from, you know, 20 to almost 60% of some of the higher numbers of unemployment or underemployment. You combine that with the increase in debt, the increase in cost, and students are looking for an alternative option because the risk now in spending 4 years and thousands of dollars to obtain a degree is definitely beginning to become a question mark in students' minds and parents' minds of is this really worth it? Is there a way where I can kind of test the waters? And if I'm not looking to go to that prestigious school and I just want to get a degree so I can, you know, go out into the workforce, is there an alternative? When you look at something like what College Plus does with being able to provide a student with a degree that's at, you know, half the cost basically of what they'd normally pay at an average state school, that's just an incredible value. And the money that they save, if they can put that into alternative, unaccredited forms of education, receiving certifications, developing their resume, spending that time that they would have spent on campus, doing things in the professional world, gaining internships, work experience, it's kind of what I specialize in. And working through with my students, and then, you know, College Plus is an amazing way of being able to really speed up and reduce the cost of the degree.
I love it. Okay, now, before we turn to our other panelists, I want to get everybody's feedback on all these aspects we've covered. Jason, real quick, what's the recommendation you give to families and students right now? What do they need to do if they're in their sophomore, junior, senior year? to if they're interested in taking a more unique approach, as this is probably more unique right now in the realm of things, where do they need to turn? Where do they go? What do they do? What should they be
doing? Yeah, well, they can start by visiting my website, which I have the link there to College Plus's website, and they can give me a call, and I can talk to them about the different options that they have. My website is aceofaccomplishment.com. That's A-C-E-O-F, accomplishment.com. And as far as other resources and just recommendations I would give, and these are not all the way across the board, but just generalizations. One would be, I really encourage students to stay out of debt if at all possible, especially with the current economic situation. If you can't get a job and you don't have the resources to cover the cost of a degree before you go into it and as you're going through it, you really want to question whether you're going to be able to do that afterwards, especially with some of those statistics that are coming out with the unemployment and underemployment rates. A second piece of advice I would give is to graduate with additional credentials outside of just your degree. Unless you're able to really get into a phenomenal school, and if you're just going to kind of the average state school, then you do want to really think seriously about what else can I put on my resume. And that's what I specialize in helping students do. And then the last thing would be to also consider spending maybe 6 months to a year out of high school, spending some time in the professional field, and this would probably be more for students interested in like entrepreneurship and business, but spending 6 months to a year trying out some different things, getting a real feel for what field you want to work in and exactly what you want to do with your career before you just jump into a degree and end up having to change your major or just kind of being directionless. Sometimes that's just kind of the next thing that students want to do, and it kind of just comes next, but a lot of times it is helpful to step back, spend some time, think about it, try to just look at the options that you have.
Okay. I love it. Very, very good. Now, I wanted to go back to Alana here for a minute. And Alana, I know that ESM does a lot of the same coaching in a lot of ways, but first, I want to know, what is the number one party school? This is very important for my listeners to know. I'm just joking. Okay, so Alana,
you knew I was a sorority girl, didn't you?
You didn't jump on that one, so you're being very careful here. I like it. But Alana, what are your thoughts? You've been able to sit back and listen to Harry and Jason here a little bit, and you've got to give us your contact information as well. What are some of your final thoughts here too on what you've heard?
You know, it's so fun and interesting. For me, Harry and I obviously both work for ESM College Counseling, so we share a lot of the same theories and beliefs. But it's fun to hear different theories and perspectives, from other people in the field. And more than anything, right now, for parents, especially those of freshmen and sophomores, it really is, get to know your student high school counselor. Get to know what the classes that your high school offers. Different high schools offer different things. And it's really important that parents know what courses their students can take at their high school and maybe which one they should be reaching out to the community college to take. I would encourage parents to go onto the ESM College website and take a look and see, some additional resources and support that our staff has to offer. That maybe your high school doesn't have to offer. And parents, they need to start when their students are young. They need to start freshman and sophomore year on this. Waiting until the end of junior year, the beginning of senior year, is really too late. You need to start thinking about what schools your student might be interested in, planning in those spring break trips to travel around the country and, visit the different colleges and universities, see which schools offer the fraternity and sororities that your parents attend, or in that they want to go to, or, just really, really see what's out there and what all the schools have to offer that you think will be a good fit for your student.
I love it. I love it. And I think your point is well made of start early, and get thinking
Absolutely.
About it. Now, your website, ESM, is in ecosammarkcollege.com. ESMcollege.com is the best place to go.
Yeah, it's E-S. S is in snake, SESMcollege.com. It has our full list of, all of our team members. Additionally, my individual email is acooper, C-O-O-P-E-R, @ESMcollege.com.
Okay, esmcollege.com. Excellent. I love it. And Harry, what are some final thoughts of yours after kind of absorbing our show here? And thank you so much for being on here. Any final words, too?
Well, I think what I couldn't agree more with what I've heard from everybody. This whole process of applying to college and getting the education that you're after is a fairly complicated undertaking. And it's very easy for both parents and kids to say, oh, you know, that's the thing you do kind of in your senior year. Doesn't require a whole lot of preparation. You know, we'll take a couple tests, get my grades out there, and see what happens. Well, it's gotten much more complicated than that, and it requires knowing a lot more about all of the various aspects, the financing, the testing, the activities you want to participate in, what colleges may be looking for, and so on. So that the more information a family has, kids and parents, the more likely they are to get the kind of outcome that they're looking for, whether it's to get through as quickly and as financially efficiently as possible, or to try to break, you know, into the Ivy Leagues or the rest of the prestigious colleges. Don't wait till the last minute, because that's when you've put yourselves, both parents and kids, at the biggest disadvantage. You get too much to do in too short a period of time. That's when stress goes up. That's when parents start yelling at kids and kids start yelling at parents. Lots of door slamming, not cool.
I can attest to that. That's no fun. Now, Harry, what would be your website, too, if people wanted to contact you directly?
Okay, mine is the same ESM website that you talked to Alana about, except my email directly is H, as in Harry, Kisker, K-I-S-K-E-R, at esmcollege.com.
Okay, so hkisker at esmcollege.com.
Right.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Now, and Jason, any final words? Again, I'm just fast. I feel bad that we didn't get as much time for you here to comment as I wanted. But boy, your point was well taken. I love the word entrepreneurship and helping kids get out there and test the waters. Any final thoughts from you?
No, I just really appreciate everything that I heard here. And just to reiterate, too, just I love the fact that you're looking for creative solutions, because I think that's really what people need to do, is they need to go out and find those better ways, as opposed to just doing everything the way that has been done in the past. And so developing creative ways, as you've discussed, with different savings accounts from the beginning of the program all the way through, making sure that you're starting early, all of those things are just great ways to prepare. So, absolutely.
And Jason, again, your website is probably the best place to go, aceofaccomplishment.com. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Excellent. Well, I'm already been perusing both your websites for weeks and excited for this show. Thank you, Alana. Thank you, Harry. Thank you, Jason. What a wonderful panel. I appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. You guys have an awesome day. And everybody have an awesome holiday.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.